The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'd spent the rare gift of a weekend off work sailing in Solva, Wales. The weather had been kind to me. A predicted rainstorm that would have seen me stuck in my holiday apartment had cleared off at the last minute, paving way for glorious midsummer sunshine. The Welsh summer is always so much more refreshing than London's, where long days spent in the hospital are stifling and the tube journey home suffocates me. While I was folding clothes, packing them into my suitcase with care, I heard some commotion on the streets below. Looking out the window, I could see there were a few people with stalls setting up on the high street. Strange, I thought, as a Sunday evening market wasn't something I'd witnessed in Solva before, and I'd been taking breaks here whenever possible for some years. Intrigue got the better of me, so I paused my packing and wandered down. The smell of fresh seafood wafted on the seaside breeze, the salty air gentle on my sun-kissed skin. Retirement suddenly felt very far away. Another 25 years until I could snatch more than the rare weekend. There were only 3 stalls, small wooden tables set out awkwardly on the cobbled road. One held bunches of wild flowers and plants. I paused to take a look, and the man tending the stall spoke to me.
"Stomach aches, asthma, lingering cough. I can help you."
I'd only been looking to check that he wasn't selling anything poisonous, but it all seemed harmless enough to me. I smiled politely before moving on to the next stall, which boasted intricate carvings of woodland animals. It was tempting, but I was pressed for time, and choosing would be hard. I quickly moved on to the last stall, which, to my complete surprise, was full of snakeskin sheddings. There was an older woman with a perfectly bald head sitting on a stool behind the table. She seemed lost in a book. Not wanting to make her jump, I quietly asked, "What snake sheddings are those?" She looked up, her eyes startlingly wide, but a warm smile made me feel that my question was welcomed.
"Adders," she answered.
Picking one of the sheddings up gently, she gazed down at it, her wide eyes full of fondness. Gently moving her index finger down the back of it, she seemed almost as though she were caressing it.
"You can see the black zigzags. That's how you can tell they're adders. Some are fainter than others, but these are all adder sheddings. I only deal with the northern viper."
"I thought adders were rare," I asked. I'd counted almost 30 of the things. "You've got a lot here. The sheddings are all so intact, too." I didn't know much about snake skins, but an ex-lover of mine had a pet snake which shed now and again, and they'd never mastered preserving the skin. The woman held the skin up to her face with both hands, smiling at it as though it were alive.
"They're not as rare as you'd think, but they're not seen that often."
She turns to me, her intense stare making me a little uncomfortable. The pupils of her eyes were wide, and so dark they almost looked black.
"They stay out of the way. People keep killing them, you see, so they've learned to hide."
"And yet you've got so many of their shed skins."
"I know what I'm doing when it comes to snakes. Some of these are old, too. They don't sell that well, for some reason.
She shrugged. I was suddenly jerked to the side as a man knocked into me, rudely pushing his way to the front of the stall. He was reaching out a hand to grab at the skins on the table when, as quick as a flash, the woman gently placed down the skin she was holding and then sharply slapped the top of the man's hand. The man whipped his head around quickly, his face full of shock. Rubbing at it, he opened his mouth to speak, but she interrupted him.
These are not for you. Go.
He scurried away as she picked up the snake skin once again. I suppressed a smile. Perhaps that's why they don't sell too well. She ignored what I'd said, instead holding the shedding out to me.
Here, hold this. Be careful. It's very delicate.
I was so nervous as she passed it to me that I worried I would drop it, but I managed not to. It was feather light. I could hardly tell I was holding anything, but the crispy feeling between my fingertips told me differently. It was similar to the texture of pressed flowers. Not unpleasant at all. I'd held much more disgusting things throughout my career, that was for sure. I felt a glowing warmth on my chest. At first, it was a pleasant but unusual heat, but within a few seconds, it was becoming uncomfortable. It was clear something on my chest was heating exponentially. Placing the snakeskin back onto the table as quickly and gently as I could, I unbuttoned my shirt, urgently reaching down to the pendant that I always wore around my neck. Pulling it away from my skin, I was surprised that no heat transferred to my fingers. The necklace seemed to instantly cool off. The stall tender's eyes were glued to the pendant, which I now held. Her pupils seemed to widen even more than they already were, and the doctor in me pushed away a crude diagnosis of amphetamine misuse.
"Where did you get that stone?"
she asked me, interestedly. I looked down at the topaz-colored pendant before tentatively placing it down on my chest again. There was no heat this time. It just slotted back into its home, same as ever. The round, smooth, pebble-shaped stone had been welded into a silver oval frame many years ago. Attached was a long, expensive chain. My mother had given it to me on my graduation day, telling me it was a very important piece of history from our families, and should be worn at all times. "It's a family heirloom, I suppose," I told the woman. "It's been passed down. I'm not really sure of the history behind it, only that it's very special to us. My mother gave it to me." Her eyes narrowed into slits.
"It's very special indeed. Do you know what it is?"
I shook my head. "To be honest, I don't think about it much. I just forget it's there most of the time. Until just now, it seems to get hot. It was burning me." I knew it probably sounded odd, so I laughed lightly. There was probably some kind of reaction going on. The sun and the buttons of my shirt, and I trailed off, knowing that my rambling excuse sounded weak. Well, I'm not sure, really. Anyway, I need to get on. I have a long drive soon. Thanks for telling me about your snakeskins. I felt an urgency to get away from here. I'd taken a few steps away when the woman called out to me.
"It's called the Glein Nider."
I ignored her, continuing to walk away until she spoke out again.
"The Adder Stone."
I turned back to her, intrigued now, but unwilling to return to her stall.
"It has incredible powers."
She tried to lure me.
"What sort of powers?" I called back.
"Invisibility, divination, healing. Ensuring the holder is victorious over their enemies."
I smiled at the woman. "I can't say I've noticed any magical powers it might have given me, but it's a nice story, all the same." Her eyes bore into me. Did she even blink? I wondered. She seemed to accept defeat, realizing that she wasn't getting me to return.
"Just ask your mother," she conceded, Ask her the history of the stone. I turned once more, this time returning to my apartment. For the first time ever, as I pulled out of Solva an hour later, I was relieved. Weeks passed. Long shifts at work, essential conferences I needed to attend to drive my career forward, and sleeping whenever I could get the chance to, kept me busy. The strange market in Solva didn't cross my mind again until I was having dinner with my mother one evening. It didn't happen often due to my work commitments, and to my dismay, she'd had a little too much wine before I'd even arrived at the restaurant. By dessert, she was starting to rant about my father, who had remarried 5 years before. Desperate to change the subject, I brought up the necklace that she'd given me on the day I graduated. "That thing," she spat, "has brought our family nothing but trouble in the end."
"What do you mean, Mom?"
The viciousness in her tone surprised me. Taking a large gulp of wine, she sighed, almost pathetically, and I felt an uneasy twist in my stomach.
"I wasn't going to tell you this, but maybe it's time. What is the working history of your family, dear? On my side, not your father's."
A line of doctors, of course.
"You, Nono, and Nona, Nona's father, too." "Yes. Focus on my paternal side. How have our careers ended?"
I swallowed nervously. This was an area that we'd been brushing under the carpet for years. I couldn't underestimate why she'd brought it up now.
Perhaps we should get the bill soon, Mom." "Don't be so impatient. How have our careers ended?"
Well, if she insisted on going down this road, she'd need to be ready for a blunt slap in the face.
"You were struck off, Mom, shortly after I graduated. A mistake in surgery."
I glanced at the glass of wine she was clutching. "They put it down to alcohol misuse." My mother closed her eyes as if she'd just been stung, which gave me a small sense of satisfaction. After all, she'd pushed me into this conversation. I continued through our family history, as she insisted. "Nono took an early retirement, just after you started medical school. It was controversial."
"Let's not skid around it. The day after I started school, a patient came into the hospital that Nono was a consultant at. The patient had a punctured lung. Nono collapsed the wrong lung, and the patient died. He should have been fired, but they managed to get him to retire early and cover it up. Everybody in the medical community was very much aware of the truth, though. My entire education was shrouded. We'd been untouchable before then. Nono was one of the best doctors in the country. His papa, one of the best in Italy. Our family commanded respect. This was all wiped away, and I was left the laughingstock."
She lifted a hand, and a waiter appeared out of nowhere, pouring expensive wine freely into her glass. As it reached the halfway point, I shot him a look. He glanced back apologetically, but kept going at the same time. Clearly, he had met my mother before. As Mom was drifting into self-pity mode, I steered back to the original subject.
"What does any of this have to do with the necklace?" I asked. "My Nono, Nono's papa, you only ever knew him as living in Italy. But when he was young, he came to England to study medicine. His residency was in Wales. He was a hopeless medical student. Absolutely awful. He made mistake after mistake. He had no bedside manner. He got basic calculations back to front. Not long into his residency, he had found himself in so much trouble that he was waiting on a board decision. Would he be fired, or would they give him one last chance? The day the decision was due, he took a long walk through some woodland, trying to clear his head. Around 3 miles in, he came across a young man. The man was deliriously stumbling around the wood. His hand was swollen grotesquely, so much that something he held in the injured hand had become trapped in his grip. Your bisnano managed to get the man to sit on a log, and he examined the hand.
he saw immediately that it was snake bites. Three of them. It couldn't be grass snakes. They wouldn't have that effect. And the only venomous snake in the UK is the adder.
I took a sip of my water and tried to ignore the uneasy feeling that grew in my stomach.
Biznano left the stranger on the log and darted off into the woods. It didn't take him long to find some wild red campion, or bloodwood nadir, also known as snake flower. The seeds were said to treat snake bites.
I scoffed. Is that true, or just a legend?
Well, your Biznano ran back to the injured man and rubbed the seeds on the wound. The swelling eased, and a pale green stone dropped from the man's hand.
I clutched my necklace. This, I asked, shocked. Mom nodded.
Biznano scooped it into his pocket and half-carried, half-dragged the man to the hospital. When they eventually arrived, they found that the wild campion seed had indeed slowed down the effects of the adder's venom, though the patient fell into a coma. Without Biznano's actions, he certainly would have died out there in the woods. The board had decided that day to fire him, but they U-turned, giving him one last chance. It was his fast thinking and his determination in the woods that saved his skin.
So, did Biznano pass it down as some sort of symbol? To preserve through hard times? Mom laughed a bitter bark.
Not quite. He had intended on giving the stone back to its rightful owner. He kept it in his pocket at all times, waiting for the day the mysterious patient would wake up. Months passed with no sign of the patient waking, and in that time, Biznano became an excellent doctor. He surpassed everyone's expectations, including his own. He could suddenly diagnose rare and puzzling diseases. He was said by patients to have a healing touch. His peers worshipped him as his bosses hailed him a hero. Then, one day, he absentmindedly left the stone at home on his bedside table. That day at work, all hell broke loose. He broke an older lady's wrist. He sent a builder home with a serious concussion and instructions to rest. And he dropped a couple's newly delivered baby. That night, he arrived home, absolutely horrified by the day's events. Climbing into bed, he tried desperately to understand what had gone wrong. Everything had been going so well for him. Then he saw the stone that he left behind. He felt pulled to it, drawn to it. Picking it up, he gripped it in his hand, and everything felt different. Everything felt right again. Of course, the next day he kept the stone close and was overperforming again. It was as if the bad day had never happened. Afterwards, he made sure he always had the stone with him. A year passed. Biznano was known all over Wales by then. He'd passed his residency with flying colors, of course, and he decided to stick around. He enjoyed the fame. People traveled far and wide to be seen by him. He'd settled happily into the Welsh ways of life. He was with a patient one morning when a nurse ran in, quite flustered. She told him there was a man on the coma unit who had just woken up, and that he was angrily demanding to see the doctor who'd brought him in. Of course, that doctor was your Biznano. He rushed over, and as soon as he entered the ward, the man sat up in his bed, so skinny and frail, but livid.
"You!"
he roared at Biznano.
"Where's my Glennider? The stone? Where is my stone?"
By this point, Biznano knew that the stone the man demanded, the stone that was rightfully the stranger's, was responsible for making him a better doctor. Without it, where would he be? Fired, no doubt. Sent back to Italy, shamed by his family. With it, though, how he prospered. He was famous, respected by all. He was saving lives every day. The power of the stone would be wasted with anyone but him. He was sure of it. So he kept quiet, instead placing a hand gently on the man's shoulder. The man calmed instantly, leaning back into his pillow.
"I don't know what you mean, sir,"
Biznano told him.
I found you in the woods a year ago now. You were extremely unwell. You'd been bitten by no less than 3 adders. Their venom was coursing through your body. I found red campion seeds, a wild flower that grows in the woodland. I treated the wounds out there in the woods, and it kept you alive for long enough to get you to the hospital. You've been in a coma ever since. I'm afraid to say that there was nothing on your person, sir. It was just you out there, sir. No stone.
The man began to cry quietly into his pillow.
All my life, I've been trying to find it.
He sobbed.
And I did. I know I did. Now I've lost it.
Yorbiznono was intrigued. Maybe he could get more of these stones, if he knew where to look. He knew they would be worth a lot of money.
Tell me more, sir. Perhaps I can help you. I could go back and look for the stone myself and bring it to you here.
The man was so grateful for Biznono's offer.
Doctor, would you really? It's deep in the woods, past the bluebells, past the Ramson, to the river, about a mile upstream, and then into the woods again. Somewhere, doctor, but I can't be sure where. There's a small cave. Too small for a person to crawl into, but maybe a child could. You could look inside it, doctor, and you could fit your arm in. For years, I've been searching the Welsh woodland for these pits. I must have looked in 100 or so. This one, though, in this woods, this was the one. I knew it, because even before I got close, I could see foam all over the floor, seeping out of the little cave. I crouched down, peered in, and sure enough, there they were. Dozens, if not more, of adders, all wrapped up in one tangled mess. Some rose up, some just thrashed about. They were doing their battle dance. They hissed and writhed, and the more urgent they got, the more foam rose from the ground and surrounded them. I watched, absolutely mesmerized by the sight. I'd been told by my grandmother to look for it. I'd spent my life doing so, but seeing it was something else. Then, the Glynnadir, the snake stone. I saw it, shining, rising up on the foam, right in the middle of the mass of snakes. This was my chance. I reached in, so frightened that my whole body shook. But what choice did I have? My hand brushed over their smooth bodies, the foam that covered them, making them damp and sticky. They were too busy with their warrior dance to notice me, until my hand grasped the snake stone. Then they struck. 1, 2, 3 of them, plunging their fangs into me. I was lucky it wasn't more. I was lucky that I didn't drop the stone. That's what they wanted to happen. That's why they struck. But I wanted the stone to be mine. I needed it. I didn't drop it, doctor. I stumbled away. Then the next thing I remember is your face. You sat me somewhere, on something hard but mossy.
I put you on a log, yes.
And I still had the stone. I was gripping it for dear life.
Biznono knew he needed to shut the man down.
No, sir. You couldn't have. Your hands were empty. I know it, for I guided you and treated your injury.
The man cried loudly now, and even Biznono's magic touch didn't comfort him.
I must have lost my grip then, somewhere between the snake pit and where you found me. I've lost it all. The powers, the treasures. I was so close. Now I have nothing again.
Now, sir, do settle yourself down. I'll go out into the woods this very afternoon. How does that sound? I'll search for your snake stone. I'll search high and low. I won't stop until I've found it.
The man still cried, but his tears were of gratitude now.
Would you, doctor? Would you do that for me? It would mean so much to me, good doctor.
so much.
Biznono left then, but he didn't head to the woods like he had promised. Originally, the lure of riches had tempted him, but the man's desperation scared him off. He had what he wanted, right there in his pocket. So instead, Biznono packed a few treasured items and left Wales for London. A few days later, he was aboard a ship back home to Italy. He kept the Glyn na Dir in his pocket, and even without his British medical references, which he had sacrificed when he fled, the power of the stone gave him the ability to build a successful practice right from scratch in Italy. He didn't go back to England or Wales, even though he felt quite sure he wouldn't cross paths with the man from the woods again. Why risk it, though?
My mother had finally stopped speaking. I gawked at her.
That's nonsense. What a tall tale, Mother.
She glared at me, impatient and angry, perhaps even hurt.
When did your Biznono retire? She shot.
I knew our family's history. Most people in the medical world did. When Nono started medical school.
Yes. On the day Nono started medical school, Biznono handed over the snake stone to his only son. By then, he'd had the necklace made so that it would always be kept close and safe. Biznono retired before his time because he knew full well that without the stone, he would be the hapless doctor he'd been before he'd stolen it. He handed it to his son, your Nono, and he stepped down. Now, what about Nono?
I shook my head, a bit confused. His early retirement, the controversy.
The death of his patient, whose healthy lung had collapsed. That happened the very day after I started medical school. The day after he took off the Glyn na Dir and presented it to me. How did I do in medical school?
You were top of your class. You seemed set to be shamed, but you rose above it all. You went on to have an incredibly successful career. You were excellent. You always have been. My mom rose her eyebrows.
Always.
It didn't end well, admittedly.
How did it end for me? When did it end?
She drained her glass, but this time she didn't signal for the waiter. You messed up a young mother's postnatal surgery. It was right after my graduation. It was right after you'd given me the necklace. I gasped. The waiter reappeared with the bill. My mother handed him a credit card immediately. He bustled off to deal with it. The interruption had allowed me to compose myself.
Mom, are you insinuating that I'm only the doctor I am because of this necklace I wear around my neck? I think the prestigious private school and the first you achieved in university have a hand to play, dear. I made a decision years before not to hand down the Glyn na Dir until you had graduated. I'd seen what happens to my father, and maybe it was nonsense, but I wasn't risking it. I needed you to learn to be a doctor the right way. At least then I could know for sure that I wasn't sending another negligent charlatan into the medical field. I hoped it was nonsense, of course. I wanted to deserve the awards I won, the respect I gained. After your graduation, when I stepped into the operating theater, I hoped so much that it was nothing but drivel. Yet, as soon as I stood over that woman, I knew it had all been the necklace. I didn't know what I was doing. That's why she died. It was never anything to do with alcohol. That came after.
My mother looked so defeated that I suddenly felt an urgent need to give her a hug.
It was because I no longer wore the Glyn na Dir, she muttered.
What am I supposed to do with this? I asked her, quietly. Mom had a resigned look on her face.
Do what we did, I suppose. Perform achieve, save lives, do it well, do it right. Hand the gland idea down if you have to, but wait until they know what they're doing, for goodness sake. What else can I suggest? The gland idea is part of our life now, and I think it always will be, for better or worse. My mother fell asleep as I drove her home shortly after. Perhaps I imagined it, but I was sure I felt the necklace warming against my chest. Not burning me like it had in Solva, but gently, as if it was announcing its presence, finally. Life continued. I didn't take off the necklace. Maybe I should have, but I couldn't. At first, half of me didn't believe a word my mother had told me, putting it down to some weird family myth that my bisono had thought up all these years ago. The other half of me felt like I knew that it was true, like I'd always known, somehow. But what did it even matter? I reasoned. I wasn't ever going to part with the necklace. I had no intention of having children. The power would always belong to me. The Glein Nadir was mine. A year passed quickly. I'd pushed everything my mother had told me from my mind. I was now a successful consultant, and everything in my life had changed. I was confident, fierce, and rich off my own bat, not my parents. A long weekend off work finally saw me in Solva once again. Admittedly, I'd avoided Wales for the rest of the last summer, and I never went in the winter anyway. But finally, I'd returned. On the first day, I slept in late. I sailed. I ate fresh seafood. It was peaceful. The next day, I spent shopping and exploring the nearby dunes. That evening, I got ready for a night in the main pub on the high street. Looking at myself in the mirror, I was impressed with the way my skin and hair shone, and with how the low-cut dress I'd chosen made my body look. I'd been an ugly duckling until graduation, when I'd suddenly become a swan. Hearing a commotion out on the street, I walked to the window and glanced down. I already knew what I'd see, somehow. An impromptu market was being set up, and, of course, I recognized the stalls. Slipping on a pair of heels, I made my way down. She was there, again, sitting on a stool. I smiled enthusiastically at her. "Hello again." I knew she'd remember me. Her eyes darted to my chest, and she licked her lips, eagerly.
"You don't hide it anymore."
I touched the necklace and shrugged. "No, I don't. I know about it now. I understand its power." She laughed.
"You know nothing, silly child. You are just a pawn to it. Nothing else. But you'll know about it when it's done with you," she hissed.
She unnerved me, but I didn't let it show. I felt defensive, maybe even angry. "I'm climbing to the top of my field. Doctors from all over the world ask me for advice. I'm not going to pass it down like my family did. We work well together."
"When the snake stone is finished with you, come and find me. Until then, enjoy it while it lasts."
She smirked at me. I took a couple of steps back from her, the anger still building in my chest. Nobody spoke to me like that. I wanted to wipe the smirk off her face. "You never blink," I told her. "You should get that checked out. There's something wrong with you."
"I never blink, no, ever."
Her eyes almost closed into slits, her black pupils huge and dominating.
"I told you when I first met you that the adders have learned to hide, didn't I?"
Her tongue darted out, retreating as quickly as it had appeared.
"Would you like to hold my skin again, Cassandra?"
I'd never told her my name. Terrified now,
I turned and walked away as quickly as I could without running. I clutched the necklace as I left. It was buzzing lightly in the palm of my hand, but I wasn't comforted by it. Somehow, it felt ominous.
"I'll be seeing you,"
the woman called to me. I didn't turn back.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.